The Two Witnesses, Commentary for the May 11th, 2024 Sabbath School Lesson by Stephen Terry, Director, Stillwaters Ministry, www.visitstillwaters.com. In your own law it is written that the testimony of two witnesses is true. I am one who testifies for myself. My other witness is the Father who sent me. John 8, verses 17 and 18. Twice a year, Canada, the United States, and Europe engage in a bizarre ritual called Daylight Savings Time. We are not alone, for several other countries follow suit. In the fall, the clocks are set back an hour, giving us another hour of sleep. But in the spring, they are set forward an hour, taking back the hour of sleep they granted us in the fall. This constant assault on our body's desire to be secure in an ongoing and reliable biorhythm leaves us feeling out of order until we become accustomed to the new hours. However, this is not the biggest problem. Our animals, whether livestock or pets, do not use clocks to determine the hours. They rely on the hours of daylight and darkness. This means that a cow that was milked at 6 a.m. does not understand why they must now wait until what used to be 7, because the clock was set back an hour. For those of us who no longer live an agrarian lifestyle, this is rarely considered. But those who have pets still must deal with this issue. If we are customarily giving our pets their food before heading off for work, they don't understand that feeding time is now an hour later. So an hour before the clock says they should eat, they are attempting to let us know that feeding time has passed and their bowl is empty. This alone, more than simply setting the clock back, accounts for more sleep deprivation than is healthy. So why do we do this to ourselves twice a year? Primarily, it is because we cannot agree on which of the two times should be permanent. Should we be permanently back an hour or forward an hour? Jonathan Swift, in his book Gulliver's Travels, eloquently outlined how these impasses occur through Gulliver's visit to Lilliput. The Lilliputians had been at war with the Blefuscudians over whether to break their eggs at the small end or the larger end, the Lilliputians preferring the former. Since the two parties could not allow the other to gain the advantage of official recognition, divisive rhetoric and actual conflict festered between the two groups. Jonathan Swift's solution was for an outside force neither of them could withstand, imposing a solution. This approach is why states appeal to the federal legislature of the United States to resolve the issue of constantly changing our clocks. Unfortunately, in a two-party democracy, if one party champions one option and another champions the other, they can effect change based on their party's perspective when in the majority, but when the majority flips to the other party, those changes can be rolled back as a fickle population and wealthy interests sway the political winds this way or that. Short of divine intervention, we have no greater power that can impose a solution. We have no Gulliver. What does this have to do with the two witnesses of Seventh-day Adventist eschatology? Adventism claims that the two witnesses are the Old and New Testaments. They do this based on a false eschatological timetable based on Ezekiel 4, verse 6. William Miller in the early 19th century seized upon the idea that prophetic days should always equal real years. This resulted in his prediction that Jesus would return in 1844, an event never realized. Unwilling to abandon that principle, the Seventh-day Adventist Church determined that the time did not refer to Jesus' return, but to the beginning of an event called the Investigative Judgment, where the cases of all will be decided prior to Jesus' return. While the idea of an investigative judgment is biblical, the date setting is not, and was derived from a claimed vision by Hiram Edson immediately following Jesus' failure to return in 1844. Rather than question the whole year for a day principle after the great disappointment of 1844, Adventism doubled down and sought in every way possible to apply that principle to prophetic timelines. It was determined that 1260 days, found in Revelation chapters 11 and 12, and rendered elsewhere as time, times and half a time, or 3.5 years, meant 1260 years. Then early Adventists created a timeline based on arbitrarily claiming that Rome achieved complete domination over the church in 538 by defeating the Arians, and the ending of papal domination in 1798, 1260 years later, when the Pope was unseated by General Berthier. That timeline was stated to be the time of the two witnesses, claimed to be the Old and New Testaments, ending with the ushering in of the Age of Enlightenment. This is supposed to have slain the two witnesses and resulted in them being taken up into heaven, as the biblical text states. The assumptions possibly would not have gained the following they have today, over 21 million followers, were it not for the endorsement of these timelines by Ellen White and the widespread dissemination of that endorsement through the Adventist publishing system and the denomination's many parochial schools and universities. Foundational to the Adventist understanding of eschatology is Uriah Smith's Daniel in the Revelation. Although containing inaccuracies of prophetic fulfillment through historical sites, the timeline is nonetheless adhered to in large part a century and a half later. Unable to truly see the future, he credited the Ottoman Empire with far more prophetic import than was fitting. For that reason, Adventists do not so widely read his book today. But most Adventists would be hard put to relate the Byzantine convolutions of the prophetic timeline that defines our most fundamental dogmatics. Start talking about investigative judgment or cleansing of the sanctuary, and eyes start glazing over if they're asked to reiterate what those mean and why. If they're asked to explain why they believe the two witnesses to be the Old and New Testaments, they will likely excuse themselves. Even our quarterly does not do the job well. Part of the problem is that we feel we must find solid links between the prophecies of Daniel and those of John in Revelation. We base our entire existence as a denomination on that principle. We claim to be the remnant time of the end people, and because the book of Daniel is sealed until the time of the end, it is imperative that Daniel is an open book to us as a church. It is the ultimate proof of our remnant status. However, I have yet to see a cogent revelation of the meaning of Daniel chapter 11. It is uncomplimentary in its revelation of our ignorance as a supposed elect people called forth for the end times. Nevertheless, we have a tough time allowing denominational introspection that might deliver us from this quandary. We accuse the Church of Rome and the papacy of being a persecutorial power when it comes to their treatment of those who dissented against papal dogma. That is the period we refer to when we talk of the two witnesses. This has not prevented us from doing the same. As Martin Luther was tormented by the Church of Rome for questioning dogma and praxis, so Desmond Ford was tormented by the Church of Tacoma Park for calling for reexamination of the investigative judgment doctrine. The Church is not reluctant to use the power of the purse to rein in dissent, threatening a member's livelihood and the support of their families if they do not fall into line. Only those who do not feed at the breast of the denomination may freely express themselves without fear of retribution. This was made clear at Glacier View in 1980 with the subsequent firing and defrocking of Dr. Ford. The problem the denomination faces is the irony of its desperate attempts to keep everyone in the ship while ignoring the leaks streaming through below decks. If the captain's helm and quarters are not flooding, they assume the journey will be successful. By the time the water level reaches the helm and the captain must decide whether to abandon ship or go down with it in fine maritime tradition, the ship will be beyond saving, and everyone will have drowned or drifted away in lifeboats. Why does it have to get to that point? To illustrate my point, Jesus spoke of two witnesses, he and his Father, as referenced in the opening verse. His ministry lasted 3.5 years. 1,260 days, using the normal day-for-day principle. He was taken up into heaven at the end of that ministry. There are alternative, valid applications of prophecy without the year-day principle being applied to everything. Thanks to William Miller and the Great Disappointment, we struggle to accommodate those ideas. We feel we are the remnant people, we have the truth, and for that reason alone, we are willing to die on that hill, destroying all challengers in the process. It is time we grew up spiritually. It is possible to crack the egg at either the small end or the large end and still enjoy a healthy meal together. Thank you for listening to this commentary podcast. You can find the written version of this commentary, as well as footnotes revealing scriptures supporting some of the ideas in the commentary, at our website at www.visitstillwaters.com. You can also find hundreds more commentaries, podcasts, articles, and links to books by the author at that website. Once again, it's www.visitstillwaters.com. May God richly bless you and your family.